Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville and Holy Family Catholic Church. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting, entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Today's topic, what is discipline? Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU FM 100.5 on your dial and streaming at WBOU.org. Today our guest expert is Dr. James Wellborn, who practices teen and family counseling in Franklin. And on our panel is Lisa and David Castor from Holy Family Catholic Church in Brentwood. Today's topic, what is discipline? A great big welcome to our guests and to you, our listeners. Now my monologue. So many parents fret about how to discipline their kids, fearing anything they do will drive the fragile little angels into raving maniacs. Our goal today is to help parents strike a happy chord that leads to sane parents and kids of character. If you have children, are expecting children, or even thinking about having children, stop and ask yourself and your spouse, what is discipline? What does it mean to you, to me, to us? Funny how many of us equate discipline with punishment, but discipline comes from the Latin discipulus, which is literally translated as pupil. My old 1977 Webster has six definitions. The first is instruction. The second, field of study. Third, and the one I like, training that corrects, molds, or perfects the mental faculties or moral character. And then punishment, the list as fourth. Interestingly, my current online Merriam-Webster has punishment as the first definition and instruction as number two, which it calls obsolete. Perhaps that's why so many people only think of discipline as punishing or controlling others. Leaders today have followers known as disciples, a definition we rarely use, but one I think best defines that discipline actually means to follow. Using this definition, it is obvious that the best and perhaps the only way we can discipline others is to be the person we want them to become. If I'm a great scientist, I will mentor my students to be like me, great scientists. If I'm a theologian, I will train and teach my students to be great theologians. Likewise, if I am a man or woman of character, I will, by my actions, teach my children to be men and women of character. Bottom line, be the person you want your child to become. Of course, we cannot overlook the need for correction or what approach may work best to correct, mold, or perfect the mental faculties or moral character of our children. We'll get to them later in the show. But here are first some ideas I have on discipline. Number one, make sure you and your spouse know what no means. Some years ago when my neighbor's house was for sale, I was in my garden when a couple came to see the house. The agent and a young couple went inside while Grandma and the couple's four-year-old son chose to stay outdoors. Son told Grandma he wanted to jump on the trampoline. She said no, but to no end, as he made a beeline for the trampoline. She followed him, telling him no, 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 and pleading with him, please don't jump on the trampoline. For the next 10 to 15 minutes, he jumped to his heart's content while Grandma begged him to come down. Then she threatened to count to three, then 10. Over and over again, she counted. She could have counted to 100,000, but the jumping continued until her mother came out of the house, upset with Grandma for letting her fragile little boy endanger himself on the trampoline. Poor Grandma was helpless to provide an excuse except to tell Mother that she couldn't do anything with him. Matthew tells us, let your yes mean yes, and your no mean no. Anything more is from the evil one. Oh, yes. Tell them once, and only once. Then do whatever you need to do to make sure that whatever happens won't happen again. And don't ask, tell. One evening we were visiting some friends who had elementary school kids. Without warning, at 7:45, the lights in the family room dimmed, The kids said goodnight to their parents and us and went upstairs to bed. Dad later explained that they had conditioned the kids to go to bed when the family room lights dimmed. Now, how cool is that? Not all of us can program the family room lights to dim, but why are parents surprised when they ask their child, "Do you want to go to bed now?" and the child says no? What would you expect? Why not set a timer for 10 minutes before bedtime and say, when the buzzer rings, it would be time to put away the toys and get ready for bed. And when it rings, then say, time for bed, let's go. 3, you don't really physically need your kids, but they need you. Yet most parents have learned to say, I need you to, when they should say, you need to. Where did that come from? Mom doesn't need her child to get dressed. The child needs to get dressed. Give her a choice, get dressed or go to school in your pajamas. If she isn't dressed when the bus comes, send her to school in her pajamas. That won't happen more than once. Of course, you need to start this in kindergarten, not middle school. 4, learn how to argue with your kids. That's right, learn how to argue with your kids. When you have a disagreement with one of your children, hear them out. When they are finished telling you why you are wrong and they are right, give them a short explanation, or if they're right, an apology, and say, that's how it is, end of the discussion, and quietly walk away. You can't make them stop arguing, but you can stop. If they continue to argue as you walk away, just add to the intensity of whatever punishment you have already established. You have to ask yourself, do you want control or chaos? The choice is yours. I'm not saying you should not let your children make any decisions, but they gain independence gradually by correcting their mistakes. 5, sometimes you must act first and talk later. Several years ago, I took a quick trip to Kroger's for a bottle of milk. As I approached the milk case, I saw a toddler running back and forth in the egg cooler on top of the eggs. Yes, on top of the eggs. You heard that right. Meanwhile, a young woman stood by. Don't you want to come out of here, honey? Mommy needs you to come out. Please, honey, please, she begged. Please, mommy needs you to come out. My jaw crashed to the floor. Lady, I scolded, your son is breaking the eggs. I can't get him to come off, she whimpered. I can't, I said, and I picked him up and set him gently on the floor. Well, maybe not so gently. By now, both mom and boy were wailing. I picked up a bottle of milk and met the store manager as I walked away. Then I stood like an arsonist watching the fire while mother and manager discussed the situation. Finally, the manager said, okay, just pick up whatever you need and check out. I'll take care of the eggs. Why is it so hard to place limits on our kids? With that, let me introduce you to our expert guest, Parenting Matters, on WBOU FM 100.5 on your radio dial and streaming at WBOU.org. Dr. Wellborn is a clinical psychologist focusing on adolescents and families. He writes a column for Brentwood Homepage and is the author of Raising Teens in the 21st Century. His wife and he have raised 2 children to adulthood, and I'm sure you will enjoy his discussion. Welcome to our show, Doctor.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Thank you. How did parenting go for you and your wife? What made it easy? What made it hard?
The thing that I think made it easy is that my wife is a more measured person with good sense. And so while I know...
Isn't that why God gave us wives?
Well, spouses. It can go in both directions. It kind of depends on the situation. So... So that helped a lot because being a professional in the field that you worked in with kids and families, that it's one thing to know about this stuff, and it's another thing to be on the front lines where day to day you're having to actually translate it into doing stuff and manage your own emotions and not wanting to kill your kids because they're driving you crazy. So she was a great help to me in being reasonable and appropriate as a parent.
I can say the same. Surely every day is filled with challenges, and I have mentioned several behavior points that I think makes parenting easier. Have you any comments or thoughts on those points, or are they off the wall?
Well, of course they're not off the wall. As I was listening to you talk about the bullet points, so to speak, about some important things about parenting kids, they kind of hit the core of things to me. I guess one of the things that I think about when it comes to discipline is, from my background in terms of my being raised by my own parents, discipline was about, like, I came from a family where there was spanking. That's not something that we did in my family, and the corporal punishment side of things. But I came from a family where there was corporal punishment. And so discipline was really about the kind of punishment and the restriction, and those kinds of aspects of discipline is really kind of was a main focus. And most people think about that, I think, in terms of discipline. But there's an increasing emphasis and a appreciation for what has come to be called positive discipline. And that is the idea of not thinking about discipline just in terms of restricting or confining or creating some kind of aversive or negative experience that will discourage the kid from doing stuff. That's one piece of it. But the other piece is about the lesson teaching. The other piece is about guiding and directing and what the desired positive behavior that you were looking for, not focusing on eliminating the behavior you didn't want to have. So that positive discipline thing is what comes to my mind.
I've heard say, don't worry that your kids don't hear everything you say, but worry that they see everything you do. Is that a worthwhile mantra?
I think so. Maybe a parallel to that in my mind is what you say to your kids. One thing to think of is what you say to your kids is in many ways what they're going to be saying to themselves. And so in thinking about the aspects of parenting and in all ranges, the whole range of that, not just discipline, but it's certainly true in the area of discipline, is that how you characterize what's going on and how you characterize to your kid what you think about this and what the meaning of whatever their misbehavior is or the thing that they haven't done that they're supposed to do, how you phrase that is the kind of thing that ultimately they will use to talk to themselves. And so I find that to be in some ways a useful way to think about how to directly verbalize what's going on. Because if you think about it in terms of how do I want my kid talking to themselves, that can help you kind of phrase things. You're still going to do the disciplinary thing, but it can help kind of add another layer of the impact of the discipline event that you're involved with.
I think that's such a good point. And it was driven home to me when I was a resident in pediatrics, and we had three little boys who were interesting and fun, but they were little boys. Uh-huh. And we had taken our baby in to see the pediatrician, and of course I went along because I was super used to want to learn something, you know, it's a good place to learn. And my wife was there with the baby and the pediatrician, and we were talking, and the two older boys were there. And Sean was about 4, and Brian was about 2.5 or so. And Brian did something, and John said something he shouldn't have said or did something he shouldn't have said. I said, Sean, such a naughty boy. Now, don't do that. And Dr. Rupa looked at me and said, Sean is not a naughty boy. He did a naughty thing.
Exactly.
And there's a big difference.
Yeah.
I thought, holy cow, that's so true.
Yeah.
And I thought of that 100,000 times since then. And then when you say what we say to them is what they repeat inside to themselves. I had never really put that little line in there, but I mean, it's really true, isn't it?
Well, and that also, that incident that you talked about gives an example of that distinction that's important to make about correcting the behavior rather than the, so to speak, the essence of the kid. And so you're doing this is not the thing I want you to do, not you are or you're going to be or you're not, this kind of absolute statements.
Dr. Welborn, I often advise parents to make a contract with their kids about some type of behavior, and then they decide with the parent and the child before the behavior happens what the punishment would be.
Sure.
And I think that has worked out really quite well.
Of course. That really kind of captures some of the essence of what's important in terms of effective discipline. And that's things like having a structure that you clearly identified about what's expected and what the requirements are and what will happen if they don't follow through with that. And you know, from the positive side of things, it's also what will happen when they do, about the kind of privileges they get or the kind of opportunities they have. Or when it comes to the aspect of character, it's about, you know, if you, when you follow through with these things, then I have more trust in you, and you get to do more things because I can have confidence in your decision making and your self-discipline, that kind of thing. So the idea of being clear and structured about that and having a contract is a really useful thing. And of course, as a therapist that sees kids and families, often when people are coming in, there's the need for a contract. But at the same time, thinking about most families don't necessarily have to go to the formal process of establishing a clear structure. You can do that more informally. The important thing is to think in terms of what are the expectations and being clear about them and communicating that. But not everybody needs to sit down and have a formal kind of written out contract. That's usually more useful and important when something's not working right. And so if you can do things in a more conversational, straightforward kind of getting together and talking about stuff and clarifying things for your kids, or sometimes even on the fly, if you can do that and you don't have a formal contract, there's lots of times that can work. Really, the contract notion to me is when something's not going right, or there's a stress on the family, like you've just moved, or there's a blended family. You know, there's qualities or characteristics of what's going on that can make things more complicated, and that straightforward kind of conversation isn't enough, and you need to do something more formal, like a contract or something.
I think that's good advice. I kind of like the idea to. You make a deal with them.
And
you can say, we'll just shake hands on this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because then they learn that when they give their word,
they're
held responsible.
Absolutely. Even when I work with families to come up with a contract, I discourage them from signing the contract. What I encourage them to do is to agree to it. Because it's your word that matters. Yep. The signature is just a reflection of your word. Mm-hmm. But in moving in the world and being a civilized citizen of the community, it's your word that matters. And so that's a little subtle piece that has particular resonance for me.
Well, one of the things that I found out in doing that is that the kids usually suggest a punishment worse than what the parents suggested. Well, let's bring in our guests, David and Lisa Castor. David is from Holy Family. Both of them are. He's an officer in the Holy Family Knights of Columbus. And I was so pleased to see your son at the last meeting. Their son's old enough to become he's an adult now, and he joined the Knights. So it's good, you know, like father, like son.
Could y'all say something about what the Knights of Columbus is so that the listeners could know?
Sure. The Knights of Columbus is the largest lay organization in the Catholic Church worldwide, and it's a charitable organization that started out over 100 years ago in Connecticut, basically because of some of the struggles that the Catholic Church was having back then in that time. Really what it's focused on right now today is helping men become better Catholics as a better Catholic spouse, a better Catholic father, and a better Catholic for themselves.
Awesome.
Cool. And they do a lot of outreach work in the community.
I imagine so, yeah. And, sounds like that kind of the foundation of what they do.
Yeah. Matter of fact, the Knights set up the blood donation here and set this weekend, and they're going to be this afternoon setting up the chairs and the beds, and they cut the tarp down on the floor. So. They do little things like that, which are really important. And they cut some weeds for some lady whose husband got killed or something like that. And they do a lot of things that are important. But anyhow, David and Lisa's son, Nick, is now a member. And I met Lisa in our a few years ago. We had a little family, a parenting conference here at Holy Family, and Lisa and David were there. Met them then, and they have a daughter too, and I think they're both in college, aren't they?
Lauren just graduated.
Did she?
And she's pursuing her master's, or in the pursuit of.
Mm-hmm. And what's she studying?
Clinical psychology.
Well, bring her on. Okay, well, what do you credit your success as parents? Because you've had, both the kids are very successful. And they play the symphony. I mean, how they play the music instruments is gorgeous.
When I first thought about that, I thought luck. But no, I think it's a little more than that. I think luck might be part of it.
Yeah.
But I think initially it's establishing the boundaries. Mm-hmm. You said earlier, no means no, yes means yes. Mm-hmm. And through various, I'll say, disciplinary conditioning, we taught our kids very early mm-hmm. what no meant mm-hmm. and that we didn't have to use it more than once. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You go through a transitional period, though, where it becomes more of a dialogue. We spent a lot of time with our kids. We tried to have dinner every night. Mm-hmm. We would have a lot of conversations and such, and as they got into the high school age, it became much more of a discussion on what's right, what's wrong, and really anything was open for discussion mm-hmm. at the table. And some of the discussions, quite honestly, were quite bizarre.
Oh yeah,
but
I understand
we've
that.
It's just been there, and I can tell you that you stated something else as well, and that is your kids become you, mm-hmm. and
so
you know, and almost to a fault.
Almost scary.
Yes, because you know we try to lead by example, but then again we are also human, mm-hmm. and what we do, they do, and what I see in my kids as young adults, it's exactly what we are, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. so your kids become what you are. So, if you want them to be, you basically behave yourself mm-hmm. the way you want them to behave. Lead by example.
You know, Mary and I talked at Redwood Methodist Church one time, mm-hmm. and about it, we had a series, I think, of six, like we did at Holy Family, here, six different mornings. And about the third morning, one of the guys said, this class is so different than what I thought I was going to be. That's how I mean. Well, I said, I thought pediatricians, they gave shots, do physicals, treat sick kids. But just, you guys are talking about how to be a good person. I said, isn't that what parenting is about? They said,
yes, it is.
Lisa, how do you deal with their cell phones and electronics and that kind of great stuff in your house?
That was actually what I was going to say for the hardest part of parenting,
mm-hmm.
and one of the hardest parts was dealing with technology. Mm-hmm. Since our kids were born in 1995 and 1997, cell phones, the internet, social media is changed dramatically, and with it, you have to learn how to limit their time with it, when they're younger especially, and to remind them that no matter what you do or put out on social media, it's there forever.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you think it's going away, it's not. Mm-hmm. So to always think about, is that something you want your grandma to see, or is that something you want a potential employer to see? Because if you don't think about that, you might put some things out there that are not in your best interest.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and with the internet and searches, and their schools are starting to do a better job of showing children how to use the internet to their benefit, but there's a lot out there that is not. So it's been a challenge, and we've learned with the children.
Do you have any questions for Dr. Wellborn? We've got him right here, and
Well, no, their kids have been raised perfectly. It's for the rest of us to be angry at them because it's like, wait, shouldn't they have suffered more? Okay, it's like, my adult kids are great, but that was, oh my goodness, it's like a pain in my butt to have to parent them. But maybe they were a lot like me, and so that's, since you're saying it's a lot like the parents, y'all are wonderful people, and I'm me, and so I had to deal with my own kid being like me.
Now, he's obviously had some pretty bad talks to him.
Oh, my goodness, I'm thinking about, I was a letter writer with especially with my son, who got directly my bullheadedness, and so we had a really fun adolescence, he and I, and so it was like at least once a year there was a letter that my wife and I would write to him about something that we needed to reassess, and like we'd have conversations, we'd have talks, I was thinking, so I'd rather kind of veer off of my own parenting, although, let me say it again, I love, my adult children are like wonderful, and so it's like, on the other end of this, I could not be happier. But I was thinking about the technology stuff. That's for most parents these days, that's a huge struggle because it's so foreign. Even for parents who are now parents of middle schoolers, the younger teenage years, the difference between technology from there when they were growing up and that is dramatic. And I'm going to tell you that I regularly give talks about parenting and talks to kids and all kinds of stuff. And I go back to frameworks of talks that I give, and just in 3 or 4 years, I have to, in the technology aspect of my conversations, I have to radically readjust some aspects of what I'm talking about because it's changed that much in just a high school, you know, generation mm-hmm. of kids, just 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. It's overwhelming for those of us who still have teenage kids as parents because you don't understand how the things that are kind of coming into play. And so there's some things around that. That's a whole nother topic about the discipline and mm-hmm. the structuring around the devices and technology, but it's a huge issue.
We're going to have a show on the unsocial media, okay. And perhaps we'll have you back for that.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Okay. I thought he was going to choke in the water.
I got lots to say about that.
Well, good.
Well, there's no plausible deniability on anything anymore.
Yes.
You know, sitting in this room, there's probably six people. There's probably six video cameras or more.
Right.
And it wasn't that way when we were kids.
Well, exactly. And so, you know, when you could, the thing that you were mentioning about kids have got to be aware of the fact that it's now a written record, that it's established somewhere, not just on the internet, but on somebody else's device, that you don't have conversations in the same way. When you talked as a teenager in my generation, where the phone still had a cord connected to the wall, even when you talked on the phone, you could go into the closet, and as long as you could check to make sure your parents weren't picking up the extension, you could have a private conversation. That's a very much more difficult thing to do.
Now, in our house, we only had one phone. It was in the living room.
And no nearby closet.
You had old-fashioned conversation quietly and over to the side.
There's probably an extension at the neighbor's house, right? Party line.
Okay,
six of them.
I remember those too.
Yeah, the neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a slight on your age. You realize that?
No, I don't care. Oh dear. Well, what advice would you give for a couple who just had a little baby? What would you tell them about parenting?
I'll start. I would tell them that it's important to establish a routine. Children need routine, and they need their limits and boundaries. Mm-hmm. But something else that I would recommend, and right from the beginning and all the way through to young adulthood and beyond, is don't forget to tell them you love them. Mm-hmm. They need that reassurance. They need to know that even though they've done something wrong or made a mistake, that you're always going to love them. So I would say always, every day, and especially when you have teenagers and they're on their way out to the bus or the car to go to school and you've had angry words, tell them you love them because they need that reminder.
You bet they do. You bet they do. Hey, this has been so much fun that it's almost time to quit. I can't believe it. Before I go, I have one little quick story. Some years ago, a new father told me his infant son would never hear the word no. I told him his son would hear the slam of the jailhouse door. Now for your homework. Have a conversation with your spouse on what parenting means to each of you, what no means, and was my answer to John's question right, or was it dead wrong? If you have kids, have the kids participate in that conversation, because I think it'd be fun to hear the kids talk too. And then go to my website, parentingwithdrparr.com, and tell me about that conversation. And if you'd like to be a guest on Parenting Matters, add a little short bio to your note and tell me what you would like to discuss. Thank you very much, and may God continue to bless you and your families.
Thank you for listening to Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue, brought to you by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville and Holy Family Catholic Church. For more information about Dr. Parr, visit his website at www.parentingwithdrparr.com.